Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Young Chicago Authors, and welcome to a very special live taping of our podcast on WGN called The Corner Store. Make some noise for yourselves for being in the building this evening. Thank you. Hey.
We were going to introduce
you. Yeah,
like
we'll
a
introduce
really,
you.
That's
okay.
Like run
you could,
up,
you could take
you know,
your
like
seat,
in
though.
A,
yeah, we got you.
No, you know in the wrestling ring when they run up?
Oh, yeah. And we have DJ Cashier in the building, so we could have gotten some music, you know, to like theme music to run up to.
Or like a rap horn.
Man. Oh, wow. I even ruined the.
No. You haven't ruined
you
nothing. No, we're good. Tara Mahadevan, how are you?
Good, Kevin.
Yeah?
I'm having trouble with this mic stand.
Are you comfortable with
I'm
it
okay.
or you need an adjustment?
No, I'm
not. Okay. Well, y'all, we have an incredible guest. We also have the privilege of getting a sneak peek of his gallery opening, which opens tomorrow night. And so we're a night ahead of time. It's my understanding that there will be more pieces in the building tomorrow night. And so even if you're here this evening, you probably want to come back to see the entirety of the show tomorrow night. But we have an incredible artist with us this evening, someone who cares deeply about the connection between art and politic, someone who is constantly researching and digging into his own craft and putting on for people who stories typically have existed at the margins of our culture, the margins of our society, and sometimes don't get told at all. Currently does not live in the city of Chicago, but is here very frequently from downstate and all over. Please, y'all, make some noise for our guest in the Corner Store. Give it up for Langston Alston.
Wow, hello.
Hey, man. Oh, nice. DJ Cashier is also on it very much.
Yeah.
And also want to shout out Ernie.
Oh, he's a real one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, dancing to the Brat earlier. letting him know how Chicago gets down. That's right. Langston, thank you, man. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
We have some treats for you before we begin.
Oh, wow, I'm excited.
What okay. Well, we hope we'll bust in. We'll, first of all, we have some... first of all, this is made with real cheese, and it's Cheetos Puffs for you. So there you go. You could share. You could eat now.
Wow, I'm gonna have to come all the way clean, and this is actually a little awkward, but I actually hate Cheetos.
Damn, we have other snacks, right, Max?
Yeah.
We have other snacks. You want some Cheetos?
Okay, snacks?
There you go. You could pass them around if you wish.
Yeah.
We got snacks on deck.
Okay.
We got snacks up on deck. I'll take one of them, and then maybe you can pass the others around. Do you have a preference here?
Oh yeah, let me get the sour crawlers.
Okay,
yeah,
there you go. Yeah, so you have some sour crawlers.
A lot more my speed.
Okay,
honestly.
Good. Yeah. We also got because you know
we
Langston.
Got you more sugar.
Langston's been spending some time at my house while he's been doing this incredible residency at the Public House. Housing Museum, and I've noticed, you know, I'm trying to keep tabs of what the young man eats. I know he likes oatmeal, I know he likes cereal, but you like chocolate, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you like this, but this is Whoppers, the original malted milk ball.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Yeah.
How do you know, what was the chocolate?
It was a Snickers ice cream bar, I feel like, in the garbage.
Yeah.
I'm not spying on you, we just share the same garbage.
Right.
Yeah, we just, that's
no, I think...
I mean, is that weird?
Yes.
What? I saw what it was. I'm like, I didn't
the garbage.
Eat it. I didn't eat it. I also throw waste in there.
Yeah, it's not actually as creepy as it maybe sounds because it's the same garbage.
I throw waste in there.
If we didn't, if we currently were not residing in the same house, then it'd be super creepy, I would say, right? If I'm like digging through your garbage, I'm like, hey man, I also see you like coconut water, which is your last snack too. So I don't know if you like coconut water or not.
I think it's cold. Is it cold?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's cold.
Wow,
coconut
yeah,
water.
Out here.
And thank you to Max for supplying
Max.
The snacks. But again, thank you all for being here. Every now and again at the Corner Store, which you could hear every Tuesday morning on WGN, we'll do some live versions of the podcast in order to get out into the community and also be able to have some of our Corner Store connoisseurs be able to ask our guests some questions that they might want to know. And so at the end of this conversation, maybe you could be ready to ask Langston a question if you have one, all right?
Y'all are Corner Store connoisseurs now, so.
Right. You're in the building. You know what I mean? You're eating
You've
Cheetos.
Been automatically given that title.
Max, you want to pass around those Mike and Ikes, too? You already did. Max is like, look, I'm not new to this. What the fuck you think it is? Thank you, buddy. All right. So, Langston, man, where are you from? Where do we begin your story?
Yeah. So, I'm from Champaign, Illinois. Where U of I is. Jamil is in the building. He's also from there.
Hey.
But I stay in New Orleans now.
Right.
So, I commute Chicago to New Orleans.
You missed
really
like a
do.
Whole chunk of life there.
He's like, I painted him out. Good night.
Yeah.
How did you end up in Champaign? And your parents, I guess, brought you there.
Yeah. So I guess I got born there.
Right. That's good.
But
we're off to a good start.
No, my mama is from Farmer City, Illinois, which is a wonderful place. I recommend everyone go. There's a restaurant called the Farmer City Restaurant.
Appropriately titled.
Yeah. And I guess she moved to Champaign because it's the big city compared to Farmer City. And so that's kind of how I ended up there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And what did your folks do coming up?
My mama is a occupational therapist. She works with autistic children in schools. And then my pops is a chef. He's a cook.
Oh.
He works in a barbecue restaurant, which is also very good in Champaign. Better than the Farmer City restaurant, even.
Shops?
Yeah.
I feel like you. I remember you telling me you weren't bragging, I would say, about your father's barbecue, but you did put on for it very heavy.
It's the best barbecue I've had.
Well, what style of barbecue is it?
So there's like some thorough dry.
I mean, I don't even eat meat, but like then, I know that's.
I don't know.
But
I don't really. You know what? I'm gonna keep it 100
for the people, not for
like,
me.
I don't know the barbecue selfless. Like. Delineations. What is the dry rub style? Do you guys know? Like, where you?
No, but I know that the Kansas City style is like very saucy.
The St. Louis style,
yeah,
too.
Not saucy.
I don't know what it is though.
Not
it's
saucy.
Like smoked and rubbed.
Dry rub.
And, yeah, is and that, you can add.
What's sauces. The St. Louis one?
Is that a Nashville?
I don't know.
No.
My man is like, you are shitting all over the history of barbecue. Okay. Well, you could Google it.
Yeah, so
but your father's barbecue is banging.
Somebody
want to
Google it though?
Yeah, amazing barbecue. And then he used to own an Italian restaurant at one time, and so I grew up cooking in an Italian restaurant, which is weird because he is not Italian.
Okay.
What did you cook though?
Italian food. I don't know. Like,
okay,
pasta.
There's like no dish that.
Well, we actually made gumbo, which was crazy cool. His family's from like Louisiana, so we had gumbo and like seafood dishes. It was like a low key Italian. Louisiana fusion, but he would never admit that.
Italian Louisiana fusion.
Yeah, it was a weird
one. I feel
one.
Like that's, yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I haven't either, and that's the only time I've seen it. It may be a thing, but I'm not aware of it.
It is now. So, do you have siblings?
I do. I have one little brother. He's going to be up here for the show tomorrow night. If you guys want to see what my family looks like, they'll be here.
Nice.
So, another reason to come.
Good plug for the show, too. Yeah.
Look at my family.
And who were you as a young person? Like, give us a portrait of the artist as a young man.
Honestly, I was hella shy. Like, I would just sit in the corner and draw pictures for most of my life, which is pretty much what I do now. I've always been kind of a nerd, and I've always been interested in telling stories. I think, like, my family is very interested in like literature, like very literary family. So I grew up with like comic books, but also like a lot of different books. Like my name is Langston for Langston Hughes. The middle name is James Baldwin.
So, the whole thing?
No, just James.
Oh, okay.
It's easier that way. And so like, you know, like
Baldwin.
Yeah. Like, that's a
Langston James Baldwin Alston.
Yeah. Right. Built in names. Yeah. But yeah, so I grew up kind of with that, background,
yeah.
Like, and I was really interested in finding my own way to tell stories. I think a lot because of that. So that's where I think the art even started coming from, is like storytelling.
And how soon do you remember picking up an implement in order to create a picture with?
I don't know. Like whenever I could first hold pencils is when I started using them, or crayons or whatever is like big enough for infant hands.
So you were drawing or writing first?
Drawing, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't start. The writing didn't even get into the artwork until pretty recently.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So like, I did some like low key like high school writing in high school, like high school quality writing.
What kind of writing were you doing in high school?
I used to write little stories and shit. Can we cuss on here? No.
Yeah, you
okay,
can.
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, I used to like write little stories, and then like I was always interested in like the research element of things, like finding out. History has always been interesting to me, even if it was like, I don't know, from the History Channel, but like,
but since when, like, how does, because you know, I mean, I work with a lot of young people. Some of them are super interested in that kind of, you know, hyper nerdy research. I was, but how did you become involved in that kind of rigor with your own interests?
I think, I don't know, it's like really just like goes back to like my parents like really presenting me with a lot of material to read when I was young. And then also like when I was getting taken care of, like in the summers and stuff, if I wasn't at the restaurant working, like when I was younger than that, I stayed with a woman who was a storyteller, And so she would go around like telling, she had like a whole like African head wrap, like style, everything. And she would tell like African stories. And so like, and she would also give me all the tools to make stuff. It's actually kind of like a cool like summer camp, but I was the only kid type thing. Yeah. And so I would like follow her around. She was also a seamstress.
Wow.
So like, I was like around people making things and telling stories like from the jump. And I think that it just seemed natural for me to do something similar. Because it was either that or I was going to be a cook, which I don't like doing for a lot of people. I like cooking, but I don't like working in restaurants. So,
anybody in your family write?
No. But my dad has always pretended that he wants to write a book. Okay. He's never actually started one. Or he maybe has started one. Don't let him hear that. Maybe he has started one that I don't know about.
Right.
But yeah.
What were kind of like, I mean, I guess from memory, some of the earlier things you drew where you're like attracted to drawing?
Probably just like trying to draw comic book characters, Dragon Ball Z, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
What were the comic books that you were banging with?
My favorite has always been Black Panther and also Green Lantern, because he could just make anything out of his ring, which was really attractive to me as an idea. There was like a Green Lantern for a little while. It was like a graphic designer, and I thought that was cool. It had really like a silly ass costume, but. Yeah.
Yeah. What was his graphic design costume?
His costume. Like, he had like these crazy like knee high boots, and then like he had like basically like a rollerblading '90s safety outfit as a costume. It was a weird one. I think Kyle Rayner is that Green Lantern. If y'all want to get in your comic books?
Nice.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Comic books and hip hop generation kids did a lot of melding. I think like it occupied in part because it's a lot of latchkey kid culture. How important or what, at what point did music begin to play a big part in your development?
It was actually like kind of late, to be honest with you. It was like probably middle school. I would come home and watch Dragon Ball Z and Rap City back to back, and that was like the kind of the genesis of like me making hip hop part of the work that I was doing. Like I guess it wasn't work then. I was just like drawing rapper versions of Dragon Ball Z characters, but like that was like kind of the beginning of that.
Yeah. I know, I love that's like my perfect afternoon. Minus it wasn't Dragon Ball Z for me. It was like Yo MTV Raps and like G.I. Joe. You know what I mean? Yeah, because you know, Ernie and I are the same age, aka we're grown ass people.
I am also grown. What do you mean?
I'm old now too.
Right. Okay, guys, let's relax.
Not allowed to be grown.
Wow. No, that's fair. That's fair. Who were some of the rappers and some of the songs that began to click with you in terms of like a love for this genre of music?
This is hella embarrassing, but it's probably like 50 Cent. Like,
why is that embarrassing?
I don't know. I think I'm a little embarrassed. Like,
why?
I feel like it should be some cool, like The Roots or something, you know? Like,
but 50 Cent is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you, guys. I'm getting a lot of support for 50 Cent.
Yeah.
Really? Thank you.
The room is extremely loving.
Yeah, I really...
They're like, no, we rock with 50 and you heavy, Langston.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, I think like that Mini Min song like really had me going as a 12-year-old or whenever it came out.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah.
But that song goes now. I also think that song, I think the intonation of that song, the tonality of that song also really kind of captured Chief Keef's imagination, the Mini Min.
Oh, yeah.
Like all those low bass notes, you know, that resonance of that low bass, I think like also influenced a lot of people. You know
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Also, 50 was like pop at that point, right?
Right.
This is like this is like when hip hop was also like in the club 24/7, and 50 was, you know, he was everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely like, I was like 12 on the bus, like listening to my friend's like Walkman CD player, and that was the only CD he had. Like, that was like I think the introduction of like me like finding hip hop outside the context of music my parents would introduce me to, and like, you know, like exploring it on my own. So I think that's where that came from, really.
In high school, did you know that you were an artist? Did you have that in your head? You knew that you occupied that as a way to identify yourself?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, this has always been, like, being an artist and making art has always been the only thing I wanted to do. And I think there was, like, a long time where I was very unsure if that was, like, a real thing. But it was also the only thing that I was, like, drawn to and the only thing I was doing consistently. Like, I've always, like, instead of paying attention in class, just drawn, like, from, like, elementary school through essentially, like, college. So I knew that that's what I wanted to be doing, like, from the jump. And I think I like self-identified that way like pretty early, but I don't necessarily know if I knew that it was like going to be an actual job ever. Sometimes I'm still pretty shocked that I get to do it all the time now.
Was your family encouraging?
Yeah, they were pretty. They were pretty encouraging. At worst, they were ambivalent, but always they were like, you know, they were with it.
When was that like moment you were like, I mean, you're still pretty. You're like 25, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say or not say.
Yeah, I'm 26. I don't know. It's like the same genre as 25.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Genre.
So, yeah. So when you said yeah to being 25, you are indeed not 25.
I'm not 25.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So 26. Sorry.
Yeah.
What is
your guess? Was good.
You're okay. Awesome. Okay. Thanks.
He also wanted to affirm you,
like everyone else. Very,
exactly.
Yeah, very affirmative and positive. Thank you. I don't remember.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. When was the moment you realized it's something you wanted to do, or you could do, or
I know? Could do. I don't think it was like pretty far along. It was like my junior year of college. I got an opportunity to do a mural in Champaign, and I got paid for it. And that was the first time I'd ever been paid like a significant sum of money for like making art. And then I was like, oh, like if I can get paid like one time, I could probably get paid again. And so I just kind of like dove into it at that point, and it became like, it was always my focus, like the primary thing I was trying to do. But at that point, I was like, this is, like, maybe a real thing. Like, this could be a job.
What were you... I mean, you were just doing drawings on, like, smaller canvases, or...?
I was doing drawings on everything, honestly. Like, ever since I could start drawing, I drew on,
even
like,
on
all
the
surfaces. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, my bedroom, like, from when I was a kid, has drawings all over the wall. Like, just, like, everywhere that I have been is, like, littered with little drawings. Like, even Kevin's house has little drawings in it now.
Oh, nice.
There's, like, little lovely notes on the refrigerator, like, shit that he owes people. Right? Or you want to gift people or gift people.
There's a list of potential gift items on the fridge.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like notes. I've always been into, like writing things to people and then, like, presenting them with, like, writing and drawing. I didn't always feel, like, super comfortable with that, like, as, like, a younger person, because I thought that was kind of weird. But, like, I think it's, like, a neat way to express something to somebody. I think it's, like, kind of romantic and kind of cool.
I mean, it's more intimate and personal.
Yeah, and so, like, yeah, like, presenting somebody with something that way has always been really appealing to me. And I started doing it, like, more as I started getting further away from people I grew up with, just, like, as a way to, like, stay kind of, like, connected to people I really cared about. I don't necessarily always send them things, but I, like, write things, like, to them or about them. So, like, there's, like, a body of work that's the same style as this. It's in New Orleans right now. Same style, same scale, but, like, on, like, the back of vinyl banners from, like, a festival that somebody took down. They're like, do you want the vinyl banners? I was like, yeah. And it's just pictures, like, portraits of my friends and people I care about. And then the writing around them, instead of being, like, stories, like, pulled from, like, found text or whatever, is, like, just me, like, kind of, like, thinking through my relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so that's, like, stuff that I'm really, like, interested in, is, like, finding ways to communicate with people through the art that I'm making in a really honest way.
That's dope.
And I think, yeah, that's, like, always been the goal, but I'm trying to get more intentional about it now.
When you were in Champaign, were you were going to school at U of I?
Yeah. So I went to school at U of I for a while, and I got really bored and, like, very, like, kind of stir-crazy because I grew up in that town. It's a very small one. And so at a certain point, I bought a car from my ex-girlfriend's dad for $500 and just drove around the country, I think, twice and really destroyed it. And then that was kind of the genesis of me being an artist that wasn't, like, grounded in a place. And then I kind of started moving around more.
Yeah. What were those 2 years like on the road?
I learned a lot, and I was in a lot of really weird places, really weird situations. There was, like, I don't know.
What were some of the highlights and the wild moments?
There was definitely, there's like, a period that involves, like, a weed farm and some white supremacists in a trailer park.
This is America.
Yeah.
Also, I need you to, like, write about that.
Yeah, there's a piece about it somewhere in the house. I forget where it is, but it's like there's a little, like, book I made about it.
Oh, shit.
Like, right after it ended. That was a weird one. That was probably the weirdest. And then I ended up in Seattle and then worked on a taco truck for a while. And then I got a commission in New Orleans and flew out to New Orleans and got paid in room and board instead of money. And that's how I ended up in New Orleans. But, like, getting paid in room and board turned out to be, like, kind of a blessing because I had space to create in a way that I hadn't had since I, like, left school. And so I was able to like start making work that people were able to start seeing. And then I was able to kind of start being a little more like free with how I was moving again. Cause people were interested in stuff I was making.
What is the board part of Room and Board?
Ooh, good question. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure either.
Yeah. I think it's food and,
but did they gave you like food money?
No, I mean, yeah,
but they gave you a room.
I got a little cash in a room in a house. Okay. And then like, my rent in New Orleans is hella cheap because of that deal. Like, my rent in New Orleans is, like, dumb cheap. So that's a big part of why I still stay there. Because I have, like, a giant house with, like, space for a studio for, like, $300.
Yeah. No shit.
It's great.
Yeah. So shout out to New Orleans. And Dan Leisure, my landlord.
That is a painful name for a landlord, isn't
really?
It?
Really? I think that's
Dan
great.
Dan Leisure.
Leisure?
Yeah.
Leisure.
I just own these properties because I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's like really not that way though. He's
okay,
good,
that's good.
He's a good dude overall.
Yeah. Well, he gives you room and
he gives me room and board
and room.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and landlords studio. Are also like really good at being bad landlords. You know?
Yeah. No, so. Dan's a fantastic landlord, man. Go. We have,
shout out Dan Leisure.
Yeah,
Dan Leisure's a great guy. If you ever in New Orleans looking to rent a room,
Dan.
Langston gets a cut.
Were you getting commissioned a lot? Pieces?
No, not really.
So how did that kind of happen in New Orleans? Was it a friend? Or
Dan like hit me up absolutely out of the blue. He saw some of the pieces I had done in Champaign like very randomly and sent me an email. And he was like, do you want to come to New Orleans and do something? And I was like, yes, I'm on the way now. Because I was not doing anything in Seattle. And I wasn't doing like the work I was interested in doing. And I wasn't really finding like the stories I was interested in that like brought me to traveling, you know, because like that was like the reason why I wanted to get out of Champaign was to like find stories to tell, essentially. And I definitely did that in like the traveling part. But once I kind of like settled,
so you're kind of settling in Seattle.
I wasn't really settling into Seattle. I was like settling into like a couch.
But it was like the last place you ended
up.
Yeah,
I like
ended the country.
Up there. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, it was
you can go up to Vancouver. Maybe you got
that's
a passport.
True. Yeah, no? That's true. Yeah, I do have a passport.
Yeah, there you go.
And when did you start to have this relationship with Chicago?
So I have like a lot of close friends here that I wasn't super connected with, but like, I don't know, they're my homies. So like, they've always been like hella welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And then
some of the homies have been on the podcast before, I think.
Yeah. Numerous homies.
I think. Oh, that's how several. We met him.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, we could talk about that in a minute, but yeah. So you started to what, come up and spend some time with them?
Not even that. Like, I came up kind of out the blue because I was, like, in New Orleans and it was summer, so nothing was happening, to do a show in Humboldt Park. And I didn't know anything about Humboldt Park or where I was doing the show or, like, anything really at all. But I came up to do this show, and it turned out to be around the corner from a friend of mine, Evan Brown, like, literally around the corner from his house. And so I just, like, went over there. And we started, like, hanging out regularly. And, like, he was a big part of how that show ended up getting made. Because he would, like, drive me around Humboldt Park and be like, oh, you're doing a show here. Like, you should see what it looks like a little bit. Which is, like, interesting because, like, Evan also just moved to Chicago. But he's, like, diligent about making sure that he, like, I think pays his dues in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so, like, he helped me to do that to a certain extent, too.
Evan is a big Chicago booster and constantly kind of putting on for artists and folks in this community and also documenting what they do in really brilliant ways.
You know, your
Yeah.
And most recently, you know, went on tour with Saba and of course has been in the corner store before. But yeah, I remember that space. I mean, I think that's where we all met more or less.
He came to our gallery. That's how we met.
Came to Argon.
Yeah.
I met him in that storefront on Kedzie.
Oh, before then I met you at the gallery.
Yeah.
That one time when Evan was dropping his stuff off.
The name of that show was what? Because that was you saw that show. Yeah. Because that show was brilliant. I mean, that was my first introduction to your work other than I think maybe Evan had put me on and I'd seen some stuff online. But then to be immersed, this was a full abandoned, essentially storefront at Kedzie and North Avenue.
It's not, but it's like a space though.
It's like kind of a space. Oh, okay. It's like, it's gross. Okay. But we managed to make like a really cool show out of that space. Mm-hmm. And it was like a wraparound installation where I did like drawings like these, but like on the walls, like all the way around, like four walls of it.
And it was about entitled.
It was called When People Could Fly, and it was about, like, gentrification, but, like, gentrification specifically through a lens of, like, I had just gotten to Chicago, and, like, I knew about the politics of gentrification in New Orleans because I lived there, and I live in a neighborhood that's, like, gentrifying right now. But gentrification in New Orleans looks a little different than gentrification in Chicago, and so I was kind of struck by the appearance of it, I think, here. And also just, like, whenever I'm in a new environment, I'm, like, very, very aware of how things look, and, like, the way I tend to, like, report on that is by drawing. And so it was actually really easy for me to fill up the space because I would just, like, see a building and want to draw the details about it. And so, like, that whole show was just essentially the walk from, like, the Damon Blue Line stop to where the gallery was.
Far is that?
I think it's, like, a mile or something. It's not that
12
far.
Blocks. Yeah. So it's, like, a mile and a bit.
You know how many blocks it is. Yeah. But can you describe, like, the differences in gentrification in New Orleans and here?
Like, y'all will just knock down a building and build, like, a really ugly one. And, like, in New Orleans, they certainly gentrify the shit out of things, but they tend to... There's, like, laws about what you can and can't build
there.
There's,
like, more historic buildings there.
And there's, like, a lot of historic building laws in Louisiana, too. And there's also a lot of tax incentives for maintaining historic buildings. Mm. And so people tend to leave buildings up and rehab them. And also there's just, like in neighborhoods that were hit really hard by the hurricane, there's still big vacant lots that haven't been filled in. And, like, a lot of buildings, like, coming down instead of going up. And so, like, noticing just, like, the density, but also, like, the starkness of, like, an old building next to a brand new one was, like, kind of intense here, I think.
Here, yeah.
And what were some of the things that you began to see in Humboldt Park, and since your time back and forth in Chicago, what are some of the things that you're seeing and putting down on canvas?
Hold on. I'm trying to think about a good way to answer that question.
Sorry.
I think, like, seeing the way that people interact with the space around them is, like, really interesting to me. So, like, seeing the way that, like, white people come into a non-white space and, like, make it comfortable is something that's definitely, like, happening there and, like, happening everywhere. But, like, watching that unfold in a new place that, like, I'm not used to living, it, like, becomes, like, super duper noticeable. So that was, like, I think what a big part of the show is about. But also, like, while I was, like, making that work, like, I just had the door open, like, on North Avenue, and people would just come in and just, like, talk to me about kind of anything. And it wasn't, like... Like, the cross-section of people that came through that door to just, like, tell me things and, like, give me details about kind of their own lives was really what made that show, like, interesting for me. That wasn't, like, the main story, but, like, all those characters kind of got, like, worked into it. There was, like, a man who, like, told me he was the heir to the Rockefeller fortune, and he had just, like, walked across South America or some shit. I don't know. He was, like... Like, a lot of people who were, like, maybe a little mentally unstable, there were some gutter punks from New Orleans that, like, wandered in and, like, tried to sell me a lot of Xanax and some stolen bikes.
This is, like, while you're drawing it, right?
Yeah. And, like, that type of thing kind of always happens while I'm drawing. I'm not entirely sure if that's, like, a me thing or, like, a drawing thing.
Yo, he would love some Xanax and stolen bikes.
So I don't really like Xanax, and I don't really like stolen bikes, but... I don't know. My neighbors in New Orleans also try and sell me stolen bikes a lot. I bought bike parts off of them, but...
You feel bad about it?
If it's a whole bike, I try and return it to the person.
So you would buy it to return it?
In New Orleans, I'll do that. I wouldn't try that in Chicago. I don't know. It's a small town.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that show at Kedzie and North in part helped to get you a residency at the Public Housing Museum.
Yes.
And also kind of brings us here tonight for this beautiful show that we're looking at. And so if you can talk a little about some of the work and research you've been doing at the Public Housing Museum. Also want to shout out Dr. Lisa Lee, who's in the building, who's the executive director of the Public Housing Museum.
Yeah. So you, I think, were the one that connected me with Lisa. And by I think, I mean you were the person.
Oh.
And I really appreciate that because I have no idea how I would have met her otherwise. But it was, like, a really good opportunity for me to take the time. So the show about Humboldt Park was really just from my, like, split-second observations of the space, like, of the, like, area. You know, it's like I had just come there. I basically made the show in 2 weeks. Like, that whole room full of drawings was, like, made, like, very quickly. And so I didn't have necessarily enough time to do my due diligence on the history or like why things were the way they were or how long they had been that way. And so to have the opportunity to work with the Public Housing Museum and to have the opportunity to really like take my time and do the research correctly, I guess, like dig into the history of public housing in Chicago and dig into the history of like the destruction and the diaspora of public housing in Chicago, like over the course of like several months through like books and through interviews and through like conversations with people, has been like a really like, I think, a lot more responsible way to do the storytelling stuff that I was doing with the previous show. And like that's been kind of my focus like since working with them, is to like make stuff that I feel like deserves to be preserved, because that show in Humboldt Park was a very temporary piece. Like all the walls got whitewashed, you know, like right after the show ended. And I think these pieces, like the goal was to kind of make something that had stories in it that were worth keeping around.
Mm-hmm. And what's the name of the show?
The show is called Radiant City, which is like a Le Corbusier thing. He's like a modernist architect who had this idea about urban planning that was part of how public housing in the United States got designed. And it was like a really bad idea. Basically of like housing people in like really dense, really segregated housing blocks, like away from their workplace and away from places to like buy things and like basically make people more efficient in the workplace, I guess, was his idea. But then like work changed and housing changed and people were stuck in these buildings.
And these buildings, in part, that you're also reporting on and digging through some of the oral histories and some of the written histories, they no longer exist in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been, like, also an interesting process because like I said, I'm not from Chicago. So my, like, visual memory and my, like, experience of public housing here is, like, really minimal. It's, like, me, like, seeing them as a kid in passing, and that's about it, you know? And so, like, I think the biggest thing about putting together this show has been, like, me really like closely like reading and closely listening to like the resources that I have available and trying to not use my own words at all, because I don't think that my outlook on it is like really that relevant, you know? Like I didn't live through it, and so it's not my story to tell. And so like all the margins of these paintings are like covered in stories that I've taken either from National Public Housing Museum's archive, or there's a book that was really useful to me called High Rise Stories by Audrey Petty that was really just interviews with public housing residents. And there's a few other books that I have like cited on the wall over here. And I'm going to add a couple more before the opening. But like really like closely going through those things and using that to come up with the material for the show, I think was like pretty central, because I wasn't like uncomfortable with like taking on the project, but I wanted to make sure that I was doing it in a way that was like respectful, and so hopefully that happened.
So none of these are interviews you did yourself?
These aren't interviews I did myself, except for the only one that like has to do with like, I guess, even like research that I did myself is like the prints are based on conversations with my homie Banks, who grew up in East St. Louis and in Springfield, and there are like projects that he stayed in both of those places. And his mama is from Ida B. Wells here, and so like his experiences.
That's a St. Louis.
Yeah, sauce. His experience, yeah, is like the prints, but everything else is like not research that I did directly. It's like me like reading, I guess, firsthand accounts from other researchers who like, shout out to them for doing that work.
What was your process with that? I mean, that must have been like an overwhelming amount of material to go through.
It like was and it wasn't. It was like really, I knew I needed the material to make the drawings, mm-hmm, you know? And so like in the interest of being like a responsible artist, I just like felt like I should take the time to do it. The Public Housing Museum had a bunch of books that I kind of like stole on the first day, and I like worked my way through them.
Allegedly.
Yeah. 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 Like worked my way through them. I started researching kind of in earnest in February. So I had like a lot of time to like actually like read and write and respond to the stuff. And so when I came to actually start making the drawings in April, I already had like a good amount of like background done. And like I was kind of ready to like jump into telling some stories.
Are there like particular, I don't know, were you looking for particular things or like?
Honestly, no. I was trying to get regular stuff, if that makes sense, right? Like, I didn't want to tell stories that were cliche or stories that like kind of retread like tropes about like the projects or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't want to do that. I wanted to like tell stories about like how people's lives were as honestly as I could based on the fact that it's not my life. And so like I didn't want to like focus on like violence or like poverty or hardship in particular. I just wanted to focus on like individual interactions and like individual problems and individual solutions. You know what I mean?
Is there like a story, any stories that stick out or you remember really well?
Honestly, favorite? Not offhand. I like read so many and wrote so many that like.
But, like the ones you included?
Yeah. So like.
Because yeah, there's like almost what there's like 10 or so, maybe 10 to a dozen pieces that'll be in the show.
Yeah.
Right. And for those people that can't see via the radio, we'll put some stuff on the gram, I imagine. Mm-hmm. But these are kind of like giant cartoon panels turned into novellas. And I think the text itself is, you know, a series of samples from multiple sources. And also even in the text, there's layered narratives that are occurring.
Right. So it's like because of the way that I like put them together, I like every single paragraph on each painting is from a different speaker. And they kind of like make a story if you read it in any one direction, but like not directly. But like because of that, I don't actually like have like any one narrative that really sticks out to me.
That's cool that you like kind of strung them together into one narrative.
Yeah,
and like, sampled the whole shit. It's like it's crazy. Like it's a mixtape. Right? Yeah. I mean that's part of
what everything's a mixtape for you. Though.
I mean, but aesthetically, like right. I mean, yeah, correct like, me if I'm wrong, artist Langston. You're right. I know. I'll be like, oh, yo, the way you're wearing your shoes.
This
is a mixtape.
But okay. Yeah, like the idea was like to stack them and sample them, like so, like you could get a cacophony of experiences in a digestible way, and like also get like a story that was more complicated than just one person's story. That was like the idea going into it, and I think that it works.
I think in your work, there's also a lot of tension between, you know, the lives of working people and the terrorism from institutional observations or people who, you know, maintain borders. And so how does that appear or why does that appear with seemingly continuously in your work?
I think if I like reflect on the experiences of people I love with institutions, it's like profoundly negative, like all the time. And so like that's kind of like background for me whenever I'm like thinking about making art. It's just like if I'm going to tell a story about how people are living, then that's going to be a feature of it. I tried not to focus too much on that with this because I think that it's something that I like go over a lot in art that I make. There's like one piece that has like police in it, but like I didn't want like my own, I guess, like, what's even the word, like, animosity towards, like, institutional shit to, like, populate the show. I just wanted it to be about, like, people's lives, but, like...
But even in this show, because even the fences and even the barriers and, you know, the monstrosities that some of the housing projects began to represent in the, you know, the public's imagination. I mean, all of these seem like, you know, ways to keep people apart from one another, you know?
Mm-hmm. But definitely thinking about like that show last summer, you know, I mean, the presence of the police and everything was very,
very
you know,
evident.
Yeah. In comparison, these definitely look way different.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like that's definitely a part of it. And it's definitely like something that like I think about regularly. But it's also like for these especially, I wanted to like step away from that because mm-hmm. like I said, they're not even like about my experiences, you know, or my perspective necessarily. And so I don't want to put my bias in other people's mouths as much as I could avoid it.
Yeah.
And so, like, the police one is, like, I even tried to include anecdotes from police officers because those were, like, included in some of the research that I did so that it actually comes across maybe a little more, I don't want to say balanced because I really feel a way about that, but, like...
No, but balanced. Just inclusive yeah. of a totality of narrative. Yeah, that makes sense. I think we're going to ask you about what you're working on and what the future holds, but maybe we could pause for a minute and open it up and see if folks in the audience might be able to step up to the mic. If you don't mind, come to the mic so we can get you recorded so Ernie can make sure your vocals are of a crisp clarity you know, be able to ask Langston a few questions, if that's okay with you.
Yeah,
okay, cool. If you could maybe introduce yourself and maybe say where you're from and then...
I'm Francis, and I'm from Kentucky. And I was just wondering how you, doing most of your work from like oral histories and readings, how did you come up with the actual like visualization for your characters? Like, how did you project an actual like figure onto these people when you don't actually see them?
So there were like a bunch of like books of photos that the Chicago Housing Authority, I guess, compiled that the National Public Housing Museum had copies of. And I took those, and a lot of the photos are from there. And then I was like just also like online all day, like looking for old photos from like housing projects. So it's like collages of pictures that I found through various sources. But a lot of them are just like ones that were, I guess, like more or less CHA promotional material, but like a while ago. So like that's, I think, also why a lot of them have kind of like an old-timey vibe, is because they're old photos.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have that vibe. Are there other questions that folks want to throw at Lance? Yeah, please come up. Don't be nervous. And if people have other questions, you know, we could just form a quick line and we'll get a few questions in and then, yeah, hi.
My name is Ashley. I'm from Chicago, Pilsen. Hey. What advice do you have for other artists or activists who want to do work in a community that might be outside of their own, and how do they engage with that in a respectful manner, kind of like what you've been talking about before?
I think, for me, it's just like listening to people. Like, I think it's really important to listen to people and to like take into consideration the things that they say in an honest way. And like, if you do that humbly, then you should be okay. And if you're not okay, then I guess like stop and do something else that you do like have a connection to. Like, not stop making art, but like stop making art in the way that isn't being accepted by the community you're approaching. But yeah, just like, just listen.
Hey, I'm Chrissy. I'm from the west side of Chicago. I wanted to know more about your process and how long it takes to make a bigger piece like this. And do you start and stop or things like that?
So,
and how big is the piece for folks who can't see it? This is, I mean, the larger pieces in the show are how big?
The largest pieces in the show, there are 4 8-foot by 6-foot pieces. And we're waiting on one that's going to be embroidered by Emma Stitchgod McKee. It should get delivered tomorrow. That's like, I think, 10 foot by 6 foot or something. I've been making up the dimensions for that since she started it. But it's really big.
Yeah.
And then, so like the process, especially for the big ones, is the time-consuming part is the research and like finding all the found text, taking the notes and like arranging them on the canvas. But like once I'm like done with like figuring out where the text is going to go, the drawing part is actually super fast. So like I find a photo and then I like do a quick sketch of it. And I think I'll have the sketches like available to like look at tomorrow at the show. But I do a quick sketch of the photo and then like basically tape it to the canvas and then just draw it with a marker. And so the big pieces take about like 3 days. Like once all the research is done, it takes about 3 days, like start to finish, to like draw it and write everything. And I like just did them all like in one go because I wanted to kind of assembly line through the show. I had a good amount of time, but also a limited amount of time to like fill all the surfaces up. And so I just wanted to make sure that I got them each done. I didn't want to like belabor them too much. So yeah, that's like the process. It's just like find the story and then draw it as fast as I can.
Hey man.
What's good? I'm Bridges. I'm from Champaign, Illinois, gang. just wondering when you're studying a lot of these stories and so on and so forth and getting in depth, you ever get too in depth and sometimes go too far deep into the stories, and then does it ever like trickle down to personal mental health or specific reflections within yourself?
I think, yeah, a little bit. While in the middle of working on this, there was like a point where I was like alone in like the studio space where I was making these for like 12 hours a day, just like reading these stories, some of which are pretty sad, and then like drawing drawings. And I like wasn't seeing like a lot of people, and I got like pretty exhausted. But then I had like a reason to go back to New Orleans for a day. And so like I went back to New Orleans and I like slept in my own bed and like ate some food and took a break. And I think like getting out of the space and getting my headspace clear was like pretty like critical. But at the same time, it's like the work is work, and I'm like pretty, I think I'm like good about like separating the stories that I'm telling from like my own mental health, like generally. And so it's not like that serious. I just like needed like a break sometimes. I don't know if that answers your question good enough.
Just as a point of clarification, the good doc, Lisa Lee, texted me and she said, room and board. Board means a dining table. Its use is quite old. The relevant meaning of board from the Oxford English Dictionary, a table used for meals, now always a table spread for a repast.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Shout out, yeah. Doc Lee and Google? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Thank Shout you, Doc. So this kind of is the end of your residency at the Public Housing Museum and the end of your current tenure in Chicago for now. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things on the horizon for you?
So like right after this, I have to go back to New Orleans and do a project that I'm pretty excited about, but I haven't really worked out the details yet. But there's a contemporary art museum there that I've been like, they've been like starting and stopping like with me for like a long time. And I've been trying to do something with them for like a year now.
Which one?
It's called the CAC, just Contemporary Art Center. It's like a really beautiful space. And I like applied to a show there and got denied and was really bummed out. But then they hit me up and asked me to like lead a project with like kids that was a mural installation. So I'm going to go back to New Orleans and do that. I just had my first Skype call with the kids and we like kind of like settled on like the thing we're going to do.
So
I'm really stoked about it. I'm going to try and let them like drive the bus as much as possible, but it's going to be about like the future of New Orleans, like looking at like environmental impacts and stuff. And I'm really like, I'm going to do my homework so that I know that we're not like kind of bullshitting people, but like it's going to be fun because the CAC is all funded with oil money, but like they also don't know, they don't know that we're doing this, like the important people.
Wow.
You know, so like we're going to get to do the installation and then they're going to get to see it and then hopefully we get in a little bit of trouble.
How old are the kids?
The kids are at high school age, so I think
aware of.
Yeah, they're aware. They were the ones that were kind of on it, and then like the facilitator is a grad student. She's like, just so you guys know, like we could get in trouble, but like I actually don't care because I'm going to grad school next year. So like, just go for it. And I was like, all right, word. Like I'm not getting paid that much, so
right.
Like let's just
be real.
Yeah, let's just do it. Yeah. So hopefully we get to do like a really like hard hitting like oil is fucking up New Orleans.
They're not gonna
like
see you in process and be like,
I mean, yeah, but no, you know, it's like the board of executives of the museum. I don't know how
they're not coming to check out your studio room.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like how is this muralist Langston Alston doing?
Yeah, exactly. It's like for a show that's gonna open in August or something like that. So it's like until the opening we kinda have like free reign in the space to like make a thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like an addendum to the show. It's like the kids' part. But mm-hmm. we're going to try and make it cool. So that's the next thing.
Have you worked with young people before in that capacity?
Not as closely as I'm going to try and do with this. I've like worked with like young people in various different ways. Mostly like when like nonprofits want to do murals, they want young people to touch them, which is cool. And so like I've been like, you know, like finding boxes for kids to fill with paint for like a while. But, like, this one I really, like, these are smart kids that are interested in art already, and they're interested in politics, and they're interested in the environment. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think that their perspective as people who, like, grew up in New Orleans is, like, pretty important to highlight. So I'm going to really try and just get their ideas fleshed out as much as possible and find a way to visualize them in this piece. And, like, find a way to try and make it honest. And being honest about the environment in New Orleans actually is, like, kind of an aggressive thing to do because it's really bleak.
Mm-hmm. And what else? What other bodies of work? Because that's a project, right? That's also like not, I mean, you're not, as you said, driving the bus.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you're looking forward to for your own practice?
So you and me are coming out with a mixtape.
It's facts.
Yeah. I think that's coming out.
Langston's singing, I'm rapping.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing all the hooks.
Tara, you don't seem you don't seem enthused.
But yeah,
not so
tight-lipped. That's a joke, by the way.
Yeah, no, there's a poem drawing thing happening that's going to come out in the fall, and that's also about gentrification, based on Kevin having seen the first show that I did here. So that's happening, and then there's also the show that I was there, the body of work I was talking about with like my friends in black and white style, really big drawings. I'm going to show those in New Orleans in October. What else is next? There's like a bunch of stuff like kind of happening, but I'm like a very I'm not like a linear thinker, but like I get like a project and I just finish it and then I go to the next one. So like the soonest thing I'm doing seems like the most important all the time.
Yeah. Well, you work in moods, and I think that's something that I've learned a lot from, you know, spending time with visual artists, with painters, people who get obsessed with the thing and then like, I'm over that thing, I don't remember that thing. And right. I think sometimes as an artist, that's actually a really instructive way to work, because then you can get obsessed. Right. And off your square, kind of, you know? And then so this obsession allows you to really focus, go as deep as you can for that moment, and then be on to the next with that same obsession and rigor and passion. And then you get a show like this.
Yeah, and that's, like, very much what happened here. And that's, like, I'm very much, by me being at the end of it, like, I'm, like, I think these are really, like, tight, like, good paintings, but I'm, like, tired of them because I've been, like, living with them for, like, a while. And so, like, I'm ready to do the next thing. And I think I, like, learned a lot from this. And, like, it's stuff that's going to, like, be in my practice going forward. But, like, I'm very ready to, like, do the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's, like, the end goal or a big,
I don't know. I guess, like, keep drawing
for a while.
Right.
The end goal is, I think, to do, like, very much the same things that I did with this show, which is, like, to find ways to, like, tell important stories visually.
But and where can people find you on the internet?
I'm mostly on Instagram. I really don't like the social medias that much.
You don't really touch Twitter at all.
No, I like, okay, so I'm a bad Twitter person. I'm gonna just come clean. So yeah, I was in Ferguson in 2014, and like the way everybody was communicating was on Twitter, and so like I got on Twitter really heavy at that time, just to like be around when people were doing shit, because like people were like scheduling things on Twitter and like doing shit on Twitter, and like Twitter seemed really important then. So like I got on it in 2014 and like started following people really heavily and like reading Twitter for my news and reading Twitter for like kind of everything. But I was never big about tweeting because like I would just like show up or not show up, you know. It was like not really, I didn't feel like I had anything to add at that point. And then like I've gotten in this bad habit of I just like never tweet, but I'm constantly reading Twitter. So, like, all my news comes from Twitter because I can't watch Donald Trump specifically talk. Like, it just gives me so much anxiety. So, like, I have to read it in the shortest burst possible. So, like, if I get news, it's going to be on Twitter, but I don't tweet.
But you're big on the gram.
Big on the gram.
And people in your name on the gram.
Is Langston Alston. So,
double L-S-T-O-N.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so people could find you there. If people are interested in contacting you for a commission, for a mural, for prints or you know, work that you've done, where's the best place to do that?
The best place to contact me always is email. It's just langstonalston@gmail.com. Or you can DM me on Instagram. Normally, I'm pretty responsive. Like, right now, with the show about to open, my DMs are looking kind of wild. But, like, I'm trying to stay up to date. Yeah. So that's like my limited interaction with the internet.
Bet. Well, I want to thank the audience for coming out. I want to thank DJ Cashera, our engineer Ernie. You can make some noise for these folks, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, want to thank Max and Club Monaco and Hopewell
and
WGN, of course, and Tara Mahadevan
and Nicole
and YCA and all of you for being here. And if we can make a round of applause, please, for Langston Alston, of course. And thank you, man. Thanks for being here. Hey, thank you, DJ Exhibit, for the beat.
Langston Alston for the logo and art.
Big up WGN Radio. Shout out to our super producer, DJ Cashera.
And boss man, Todd Manley.
Thank you, Dami.
And Marlena, the snack provider.
Shout out Rena, the official photog in the corner store.
Stay up with us, Shy Corner Store, on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
And please, y'all, please rate and subscribe on iTunes, Apple Music, SoundCloud, and wherever you listen to a podcast. Consider giving us those 5 stars.
And tell a friend.
And thank you for listening and rocking with us. We'll see you next week.